and welcome to episode 8 of Rangers Rundown, your 2018 home for all things semi-related to the Texas Rangers should they continue to interest us from day to day. The only thing greater than our podcast's nuclear rage is our pitcher's abilities to spite us and post good starts immediately afterwards. I'm Max, I'm joined today by Hayden.
Hello.
And Mike.
Good evening.
All right, let's play ball. So Texas is sitting pretty, 8-15, fifth in the West, which I think is good, and the fourth worst record in the American League, which I guess is bad. Seventh worst offense in terms of runs per game, giving up the sixth most, not exactly the way you'd draft up a successful baseball operation in 2018, but that's what we've got. We've got some promising young guys, we've got some entertaining old guys, we've got some not entertaining old guys.
But there are some fun guys to watch, and that's what keeps me coming back this year. That's what you have to focus on, not the scores.
Definitely, and those guys were certainly on display over this last weekend series versus the Mariners. Namely, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Guzman has had his own big moments, mostly last week versus the Astros, but still has looked good. And also, Profar, still not old. And who else we got out there? Delino DeShields is back. Mazzara still really young.
Oh, we've already addressed that. DeShields is back. Dang.
Yeah. And
do all teams field center fielders? Is that like a thing that everyone else does?
Don't all field a center fielder that can rob another team of a home run like you did today? That was very impressive.
Why doesn't everyone do that? That seems fun.
It's kind of cool to just put somebody out there that knows what they're doing. And I mean, no offense to the guys who have played center field, but we've talked about this before. When you see somebody who is not good at defense after seeing somebody that is good at defense, it's glaring. So when you see Joey Gallo play third base like he did last year, and he looked good, but he also just failed to make plays that Beltre makes with his eyes closed, and you really notice that. So it's cool to have a center fielder with DeShields. He's kind of a question mark, but all signs point to him being a definite plus in the field, and that's fun to watch, and it will help with our non-rangy corner outfielders. We seem to have about 8 of those on this team, so having a guy that is elite with the speed will at least, you know, help to limit the damage with these fly balls and balls in the gap and stuff like that.
That is certainly the idea. So I know we were talking about some of the guys who interest us in terms of older and younger players. We definitely have seen some pretty good showings from the young guys. Mike, I know you've been doing some work on the Rangers' sort of overall start and some maybe reasons for optimism going forward. Do you want to talk about this more?
Absolutely. Yeah, I did a deep dive into some of the numbers, fumbers as we like to call them. And took a look at the average age of this team, both now and going forward, and comparing it to previous generations. And not just looking at the age of one season, but looking at the trend over the course of several seasons to see when this team, when they went with the youth movement in the past, what it meant for them down the road. And some really interesting numbers. So right now, the Rangers' average age is 29.9, which seems really high given the number of young guys in the team. Of course, that doesn't reflect some of the fill-ins for guys like Andrews and Odor. But if you break it down by fielders versus pitchers, the fielders are average age 28.4, and the pitchers are at an average age of 31.4, which is obviously skewed by Big Sexy at 44, almost 45 years old. He should almost count as two pitchers, both in age and weight, I guess. But yeah, so the first thing I did is I looked at what will this team look like next year. And it's almost impossible to predict on the pitching side because we may have several guns for hire next season because of all the one-year contracts and, you know, the expiring contracts. Could be Mike Minor and a bunch of guys that have never worn a Rangers uniform before. But on the fielding side, just, you know, looking to my crystal ball, the only real changes I made from what the team looks like now is assuming that Beltre will be traded either at the deadline or they'll let his contract expire and he'll go play for a contender next year. And then inserting Willie Calhoun in left field. And if you look at that, so you've got Trinas, Guzman, Odor, Gallo, Andrews, Calhoun, Delino DeShields, Mazara, and Chu. The average age of those fielders is 26.4, which is significantly lower than at other points along the way. By comparison, the only seasons that we really had below that were 72 and 73, but they were 25.85 and 26.35. Those are the two youngest average age teams that we've ever had, and those teams lost 100 games and 105 games.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, but what did that mean for them? Very young team, big loss team. So, you know, they made the most of that number one draft pick in drafting David Clyde, which really didn't work out the way they had hoped to. But, you know, they had some young guys, and Toby Hara in 72 was 23, Jeff Burrows was 21, Tom Grieve was 24. Then they added Hargrove came up in 74 at age 24. But then they began to fill in around them, and mainly on the pitching side. They added Gaylord Perry and Fergie Jenkins, for the longest time the only two Hall of Famers that wore Ranger uniforms. In 76, they added Burt Blyleven. In 77, they added Doc Ellis, the famous man who pitched a no-hitter on acid. But that team improved from 72. They gradually got a little bit older. They gradually started adding some wins. And in 77, they went 94 and 68, which back in that day didn't mean playoffs, but I count that as a playoff team because under today's structure, you would definitely get into playoffs with 94 wins. So I would consider that a success. I know late 70s, that's when I was first beginning to follow Rangers, and they were a fun team to follow. But they continued to age, going up to a high in 1980 of 30.5 for their average age. So then it started to come back down, and they kind of floundered through the 80s. But then in 86, they recommitted to the youth movement. Actually, 85, they brought up Steve Buchel and Jose Guzman at 23 and 22, respectively. And then in 86, they really went all out and added Kevin Brown, Pete Incibilia, Bobby Witt, Edwin Correa, Ruben Sierra. A lot of reason for excitement. And the funny thing is, this was the only time. They were at an average age of 26.8 that year, but they actually won 87 games, which is pretty impressive for that young a group of guys. Then in 89, you know, they're working their way towards bringing these guys up, getting them to their, you know, the late 20s when they should be at their peak production. 89 was a great year for excitement. In the terms of the guys they added Rafi Palmeiro, they added Julio Franco. They had the infamous trade where they traded Sammy Sosa for Harold Baines, but Baines was supposed to be a solid guy for us. And, of course, they added Nolan Ryan that year. And Juan Gonzalez came up. So there's a lot of reason for optimism. This, I would say, is the only time that the youth movement really didn't work out for them because they kind of floundered over the next few years. And then they kind of started to retool again. In 91, Pudge came up at 19 years old, Dean Palmer at 22. And in 94, they added Rusty Greer, Will Clark, Rick Helling. And then they started to fill around them in 1996. Kevin Elster became the first legitimate shortstop this team had ever had. And at the trade deadline, they traded for John Burkett, and lo and behold, they made the playoffs for the first time. And the late 90s were really the best team that this town had ever seen until, obviously, what happened in 2010. But they sustained that. They kept it going. They added John Wetland in 97, the best closer in the game. In 98, they brought in Aaron Seeley and Todd Zeal, won 88 games that year with the playoffs. And then the next year, they went 95 and 67, which was one of the best teams that I felt like we'd ever had up to that point. But at that point, they were the second highest average age in history at 30.4, and that's just not sustainable. And so 2000 happened, and we made a lot of ridiculous moves in the early aughts, obviously. The A-Rod contract, then they're bringing in old guys like Andres Galarraga, Kim Caminiti, Chan Ho Park was joining, in the team. So we all know the 2000s were not a time for a lot of optimism, but they recommitted to the youth movement in 2008, and that year Matt Harrison came up, Tommy Hunter, C.J. Wilson, Kinsler, Nelson Cruz, David Murphy, Derek Holland came in the next year, and then they filled around him again in 2010 and added Vlad Guerrero and the big trade for Cliff Lee at the deadline, and
right.
There we go. We go to the World Series that year and the next year. And really, the odds, it's really funny to see. For me, I was getting a big laugh on Twitter today because guys like Evan Grant and Adam Morris were having to fend off the crazy Rangers fans that were calling for Banny's head and for JD's head. And it's just, you know, you go through cycles. So when I look back at this, you know, kind of in summary, you know, there's been four times they've committed to the youth movement. And three out of four times it led to some really good teams. And so the question is, where do we go from here? And I have a lot of confidence in this front office that they're going to fill in those pieces. And we're going to hope for some of these young pitchers that are in the lower levels to start developing. And then we'll fill in around them. And in my opinion, I think this team is probably going to be playoff ready, if not 2020, then definitely 2021. And that's going to be the quickest turnaround in history, because those four instances I just described, you know, they committed to the youth movement in 72, got to 94 wins in 77, but it wasn't until 96 that they actually made the playoffs. You're looking at a 19-year span between good teams. Then in 99, they reached their peak at 95 wins, and then it was 2010 before they had the next big team, so you're looking at 11-year drought there. And you know, the last time this team was really good was 2016 when they won 95 games. That was a really fun team. And if they can get back to playoffs in 2021, that's only a 5-year drought. And so that's what impresses me with this front office, is that, you know, even though the minors look kind of threadbare right now, we've got a lot of young, good guys in this team that are, they're going to improve. Mazar is only 22. You know, you've got Gallo at 24, 25?
Less than that, I don't know. He's 23 or 24.
Okay. You've got several years for these guys to grow into these young bodies, 28 being the year that everyone points to is the year that athletes reach their peak, and I think that's going to be, this will work definitely to their benefit. 2021, that's a year you should have circled on your calendar, that there's going to be some fun times to be a Rangers fan again.
Well, that's when most of our top name prospects right now, and obviously a lot will change in the next two and a half, three years, but that 2020, 2021 is the area we're really expecting a lot of the higher name but lower level kids on the farm to be coming up. So you should be hopefully expecting to see Leody Taveras in the majors by then. Cole Reagans, if he recovers from his surgery and is able to kind of recover some of his stuff, maybe starting to get into that conversation, but Kyle Cody is hopefully a part of those teams. If Hans Kraus keeps up what he started with his professional career, you're talking about him being an option in 2021, 2022. You're hopefully getting productive major league innings out of guys like Yohander Mendez by then, and maybe some of these dudes who are right now, maybe a little bit of the shine has come off for one reason or another, but who are expected to hopefully be major league performers, and that would include folks like Brett Martin, who's with Frisco this year. Jonathan Hernandez is off to a very, very good start. Joe Palumbo, who looked like he was going to be our best left-handed pitcher in the minors last year before he had Tommy John, and who should be returning to professional mounds pretty soon. I know he's been throwing, and I think he's expected to make his debut in the early summer. But we've got a lot of these guys who are a couple years away. You know, I think there's been this idea recently that the Rangers don't have any upper level farm talent. We don't have anybody to rely on, and that seems to be largely true. Although I think we'll get to talking about a couple of those guys who are sort of being surprise contributors already right now, maybe a little bit later on today. But a lot of the names who you can still be the most hopeful about, who have the highest potential ceilings in this organization, there's a whole glut of them. And obviously the majority of these guys are not going to be good big leaguers, and many of them may not be big leaguers at all. It's just kind of the nature of the game. But most of our top end talent is looking like it's going to be on this team in hopefully the really big star level seasons out of some of these guys who are kids right now. I mean, you just went through the list. We're hoping to be seeing in 3 years a transcendent Joey Gallo being supported by Leody Taveras at center field, or Nomar Mazara driving in Julio Pablo Martinez, and Willie Calhoun sitting at DH planting himself in that 2 or 3 hole and just going to town on people. And I think there's definitely some excitement on the horizon. We're going to deep dive these prospects at some point. I know we've been meaning to get into that, and we're going to get there, but I think something that when we start talking about, and I don't know that this is the right word for what the Rangers are doing, but when people start talking about tanks and they start talking about youth movements and reloading and rebuilding, I think occasionally the guys who are on the roster right now can get lost in the shuffle, which it's impossible to really understand how Joey Gallo can get lost in any shuffles. He's a very large man. But I think that the contributions of players like Gallo and, you know, Rugneto Dor and Nomar Mazara, that's really what's going to be important. You need some of those guys to be the older stars in their prime years on those teams, supported by hopefully a bevy of young talent, and you import a couple of free agent arms or bats to tie it all together. You know, you talked about the early 2000s Rangers, and I think there's something that gets talked about a lot, you know, the A-Rod contract and what it meant for the team, but the one that always sort of stood out to me, and I'm not sure that I really grokked this at the time because I was pretty young and didn't really understand how contracts work, but something that I've definitely looked back on is, like, why was this team paying the second highest salary on that team was Rafael Palmeiro at 36. We were paying a 40-year-old Andres Galarraga $6 million. He was the, like, sixth highest paid player on the team. We had a lot of just bad. Ken Caminiti was pulling $3.5 million. That was a top 10 contract for the Rangers. Like, we spent all of our money on A-Rod and a bunch of old dudes who weren't very good. And that's not great.
No, it's not. I think Tom Hicks thought that he could just spin his way into a playoff team, and just didn't seem to surround himself with the kind of baseball minds that could have told him to tap the brakes on some of those signings. That Chan Ho Park contract was just ridiculous. I mean, just from the outset. I can't remember the exact term. It seems like it was about $55 million in total. But he wasn't good. And they floundered for a long time. And just, they wandered aimlessly through the aughts, which was really frustrating as a Rangers fan. But now you've got what seemed to be much brighter minds. You know, it's no surprise to JD that we've given away, not given away, but traded away a lot of our upper-level talent in the minors. But he's not sitting on his hands. I just read recently they've signed 49 international players in the last year. I mean, a lot of those guys, they're going to pan out. You know, they're taking a shotgun approach right now. They're getting what's the best available out on the market. You mentioned JPM. That was a great signing, and just dream of an outfield of Julio Pablo Martinez, Leody Taveras, and Mazara, and you know, all as well.
One thing that you mentioned, the kind of the history of the team and the way that we have gone as far as youth movements, so to speak, and the corresponding success, and maybe what the next moves were in order to reach that success. It seems to me like this team might be actually in a really good position. I mean, obviously, I'm going to be on the optimistic side. But we're projected to have the third youngest roster in team history next year, and that's with Chu, I believe. So if we take him off, then it's going to be massively young, and big talent, young guys that we're hoping will make big strides. Condor, DDS, guys like that are definitely not finished products, and we really would like for them to reach another gear, but. Let's say that they do, or let's say that half of them do, or something like that, and the year is 2020, 2021, and hopefully, especially with the lack of spending that we've done this offseason, we'll be in a position to sign one of the marquee free agents, maybe convince them to come play for this team, maybe similar to like how the Phillies got Jake Arrieta to come play for them this season, kind of a little bit before They're expected to really contend. If we can get a player like that to go along with the young guys to maybe accelerate that window just a little bit, and then it's 2021, and instead of us kind of phasing out into being too old, kind of on the latter half of that contending window, we're actually getting to be supported by all of these young arms coming up. So instead of having a massive influx of older free agents around kind of our young guys or guys that are just entering their prime, perhaps we'll be in an era where the guys that are entering their prime are also going to be supported by really young guys, which of course just continues to extend the window. As your young guys get older and get better, then the new young guys come in and they get older, they get better, and you know, that's how successful franchises are able to be successful for so long, as they continue to churn out talent that they're not having to break the bank for, and they build in-house. And so who knows if that's going to work. A lot of planning with players and teams and franchises sounds really good on paper, and I would say that's probably what I just laid out is probably similar to what the front office hopes for, but we'll see if it happens. But the kind of the good thing is that we are already kind of in this era of, all right, we're going to be young and we're going to be kind of exciting, and the sky's the limit for some of these players. And we're only, I believe, 11 days till Willie Calhoun can be freed. I don't think it's going to happen right on that day, but that's a guy that I'm extremely excited for. All Rangers fans should be. And let the young guys impress us and let us dream about them in a non-weird way, but in a baseball-only way.
It can be in a weird way. Like a little weird. It's a good weird.
You can do that.
Don't kink shame me. I can dream about baseball all that I want.
Yeah.
We're all baseball nerds. You know that. So it's okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll go ahead and concede to that. Go ahead and do whatever you want.
Yeah, and if you listeners are wanting to dream, why don't you go and do a search on Leody Taveras's put out from center field to home plate over the weekend. That's a guy you can definitely dream about. That was really fascinating to see online this weekend.
Yeah, Taveras is off to a pretty good start. The walk rate has been very nice, and you know, he's kind of doing to high A what you want. And the big question about Taveras right now, just his physical development. He's still pretty young, and he's a switch hitter, and he needs to just basically keep getting stronger, keep getting bigger, grow into that body, and let that game power flow through him. And I have personally, you know, little doubt that he's going to get that done. So he's been definitely somebody to watch, and he's been somebody to watch on really the only team, minor league wise, worth watching so far this year. And down east, the others are not having great starts.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him at Frisco later this season, though, and that's just getting him another step closer.
Definitely wouldn't be surprised to see that. I think that's going to be something to watch, is our outfield progression for the minor leagues, because you've got a couple of guys who have already started moving their way up. Scott Heinemann is the big one, who went from Frisco to Round Rock after just annihilating pitching at Double A. Heinemann is not sort of a traditional top prospect type, but he's somebody who looks to contribute on a major league roster as a fourth outfielder, who, you know, does have the potential to grow into more. He could become an everyday bat. There's certainly some evaluators who really like him. They love his approach to the game. Do they like his overall athleticism? He can fake it in center field, although it's not really his position, so that shouldn't be all that surprising for Rangers fans in 2018. He's somebody who's really worth watching, and I think they're looking to move up one of his partners from Double A pretty soon. Hunter Cole, a return in the Sam Dyson trade. There's definitely a lot of red flags in his profile. He's been at Double A for like 12 years now. I think he's like 60 years old. He's somebody who should be hitting well at Double A by now, and he's never hit for power, and he's not really doing that this year. But he's taking walks. He's getting on base. You know, he's playing the game really well, and I think he's finally probably going to get his look at the AAA level pretty soon. And he's, again, a guy who's most likely a fourth outfielder when it comes to his, you know, final major league position should he make the bigs. But again, these guys break out every couple of years, and you got somebody who was supposed to be a fourth outfielder who makes it as a starter, and maybe we've got one between those two guys. And should Cole move up to AAA, that would open up a position in the outfield for a guy like Leody Taveras, which would eventually open up an outfield position at high A for some of the dudes who are in Hickory right now, like Miguel Aparicio, Eric Jenkins, who maybe has started hitting at Hickory, possibly something to look at. That'd be fun. Or Pedro Gonzalez, who came over for Lucroy. Gonzalez has played the bulk of the innings at center when he's been in the lineup. I think he's probably seen by the team right now as the best prospect. Hard to really definitively say that, but that's my gut feeling on him. He might move up to high A, and then Julio Pablo Martinez is expected to play probably at the high A level whenever he does come stateside. He's expected to work at the Dominican for a few months, kind of knock the rust off. You treat the Dominican as sort of an extended spring opportunity when the DSL starts and working out the complexes there. You know, get him ready to come stateside where he's going to be expected to, you know, live in the States and speak English every day. It's a big transition for a lot of guys, so they're going to definitely work him in slowly. He's not a DSL player by talent level, but they're going to give him some time to get used to being a professional baseball player in an American system, and then, you know, tote him on over hopefully midsummer and give some of our evaluators a good chance to get eyeballs on him.
Yeah, he's a guy I'm really excited about. You know, Leonis Martin, that was a guy that kind of a similar profile, I guess, coming out of Kiva, that joined the Rangers and was a solid contributor there for a couple of years. I'm really hoping to see big things out of JPM.
The general reports I've been seeing on him are that he's faster and probably a more natural center fielder than Martin. Doesn't have the big arm. Slightly different sort of offensive profile. His numbers in Cuba were really, really good, although there's some pretty big concerns about the quality of pitching that he was facing at the time. Pitching has taken a pretty big hit on the island over the last couple of years. But Martin is definitely one comp I've seen. The other one I've seen fairly frequently, I think, is Curtis Granderson, which, yeah.
I'll take that. Be fun.
All day long.
We'll see what we get out of that.
It's so exciting to kind of, I guess, kind of crystallize the contrast in what we have on the field, and the record isn't where you want it to be. There's disappointment on this team, especially coming after last season and kind of going forward here. And next year, we probably won't be that great either. But I feel like you can see that super clearly if you just want to look at like one position group. It would be the outfield. Outfield defense is terrible and projects to continue to be terrible outside of Delino DeShields. And when he was down, it was very apparent. We have just an outfield full of guys that really should be the worst outfielder on the field. But we had to field three of them at the same time. And you can look to the future. You got Bubba Thompson, we haven't even mentioned him yet, JPM, Leody, Pedro Gonzalez, some of the guys in the upper minors that might end up clicking, putting it together, Eric Jenkins, etc. So the kind of state of longing for something better for the whole team as a whole, I think, is signified with the outfield. And then the hope on the horizon for things to completely do a 180 and be exciting and be not just solid and good and in the right position, but an excellent, like an outfield full of three center fielders is so easy to project. I mean, we have like six center fielders that we could project as actually end up being the center fielder for this team for at least 5 years in a row. So the fact that we have all of these guys coming together, they're going to arrive in Arlington at different times. It's cool to see how the way that things are right now is not permanent. We are moving forward. There's a hope on the horizon, so to speak. And I'm so excited to get these guys closer to the major leagues. And especially in Frisco, as you said, Mike, Leody hopefully will be able to play in Frisco later on this summer. That would be a great... If he does, I'm definitely going to make a trip over to see him. So, and I'm sure a lot of Rangers fans would be well served to do that as well, because the future is exciting and it's budding.
Yeah. Yeah, I expect to make a trip to Frisco late summer, early fall, and see Joe Colombo on the mound and Leody Taveras playing center field. I think that would be pretty exciting to watch.
I'll sadly watch it on my computer in 1996 standard definition. But, you know, it'll be fun. It'll be fine. I'm not going to be bitter about that at all. Not even a little bit. Okay, maybe a little bit. I'll be a little bit better about it.
Now we'll give you a full report after the game. Would that make you feel better?
Yeah, I'm already appreciating it so much. It would be more fun to watch than what the Rangers put out this series against the Mariners, dropped two games, and in kind of annoying fashion. So we got another effective, if I think this is going to be a kind of a calling card early in the season, an effective yet inefficient start from Mike Minor, who I find his inefficiencies to be sort of the more acceptable kind. He is somebody who's still transitioning back into being a starting pitcher, and he's generally been pretty good. He doesn't look like he's nibbling so much. He's just taking his time to get good pitches across on guys. So he went, I think, 5 1/3 innings, and yeah, it was pretty good. And then Kieran Kella was not.
No.
Which, that's unfortunate. And then Saturday we had the big blow up in the 7th inning, which, you know, the bullpen had been doing pretty well, like really well for us early part of the season. So it was sort of inevitable we'd have an explosion. I really don't like watching an ineffective Alex Claudio. That is not fun, and I'm hoping it's just some early season blips and he's getting through the stuff, but he's been getting hit this year much more than I'd really like to see, especially out of the guy who I was kind of expecting to be our steadiest performer out of the pen. I mean, I suppose someone's going to feel very high and mighty that they predicted correctly that a dude who throws 85 wouldn't be an elite reliever for his entire career, but he's just been so dang good, so it has been rough watching that early in the season.
It's the curse of the Rangers closer. It's a position you don't want to be in, because if you close one year, it means that you're just going to monumentally suck the next year.
Yeah, RIP in pieces, Kieran Kella. Sorry, buddy. It's got to be you. I'm going to throw you out there this year.
Yeah, I'm racking my brain right now. When's the last time we had a closer that left with dignity?
Joe Nathan.
Yeah.
Did he leave with dignity, though?
Well,
he didn't lose his job. He didn't blow up and lose his job.
No.
That's true. Yeah. That's probably a good one.
Man, okay.
Like, as much as I would never have been able to convince myself of this at the time, because I think everyone kind of hates their closer, I almost miss Joe Nathan's steady performance. That's weird to think about Joe Nathan. I missed that one time he had a strikeout on a guy that was so bad that even Nathan was assuming it was a ball, and everyone in the stadium assumed it was a walk, and it wasn't. He has that,
oh,
that
I
look
remember
walking
that.
Back to the catcher where he's like, ooh, okay. That was a good one. That video comes back up in my head every couple of months.
I remember not being very excited when he was signed, but he was solid. I mean,
he's pretty effective.
Yeah, he came in and he did his job, and very little fanfare. He was just kind of a workman-like performance.
So we'll see what that looks like going forward. Rangers picked up the win today, of course, because as we discussed on this podcast in our last episode, Martin Perez is a phenomenally talented and efficient pitcher who is going to get his outs. He's going to rack up strikeouts. He's going to, you know, limit contact. And I don't know what the hell is going on. Like, I think my intro is right. Every time we just talk as much trash about someone as possible, they're going to go out and show us up. So maybe we are being listened to in the right places. If so, give us a holler on Twitter. But yeah.
I did see Levi Weaver's article, you know, about Martin Perez talking about essentially shutting down the haters who disparage him for being kind of mentally weak and disappointing and frustrating to watch. And he had he snapped back pretty hardly and pretty harshly. So I think that actually is a pretty good sign that he does listen to us. So, because the last podcast was like 35 minutes of why Martin Perez is awful and why we can't spend $7 million on him next year. So,
I mean, to be fair, his ERA still rounds to 10.
Yes,
not
that's
like
true.
We're out of the woods here.
That's true, yeah. But it did go down today. So at least there's that.
Yeah, and the other part of the podcast was spent talking about just how good the bullpen was. So
right.
We are great sports predictors.
Whoops.
It's baseball. There's just nothing like it. You can look at the standings across baseball right now just to get a snapshot of the consensus of everything was Cubs, Nationals, Dodgers, Indians, Astros, and Red Sox or Yankees at the top. That is not been what's happened so far. It's fun. Baseball is why we watch, because you can be good one day and be terrible for the next week and back and forth. So that's why we have a podcast, to ride the wave and react viscerally and emotionally.
But I think the real reason we watch baseball, of course, is to see Joey Gallo put balls into orbit, and he did that again today. I love when Joey Gallo hits things that StatCast has issue with. I kept refreshing my at-bat app, seeing if it would finally post the StatCast values on it, and I don't believe it ever did. Did see something online, like 116 miles an hour off the bat, like a 35-degree launch angle or some nonsense. Mazzara also had a big bomb that was pretty fun to watch. So I'd love to see these guys hitting for power. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa almost hit that walk-off grand slam off Edwin Diaz Saturday night. I think he should have had a bases-loaded walk. I'm pretty sure the umpire absolutely blew that call on him. Looked like Isaiah worked a pretty good plate appearance off of Diaz. He's one of the most terrifying relievers in the game right now. So
at least we did.
A couple of things that are predictable.
Yeah. But we did put up a good fight, which, you know, you see Edwin Diaz come in the game and you just say, all right, well, what else is on? But we did really well, and we ended up loading the bases. Again, Kiner-Falefa did earn that walk, and we made a really, really good pitcher look pretty vulnerable. And those are the kinds of things where if you look at the box score, you'll say, oh, we lost, or oh, we didn't get a hit with runners in scoring position. But there's a lot of good progress going on with this team right now.
Are we ready to make Kiner-Falefa our actually good player of the week?
I'm here for that. Yep. I second that motion.
Max? I think the motion carries.
All right.
The
unanimous.
Eyes have it.
All right. I'll draft the certificate and get it over to John Blake. It's on its way.
I'm actually going to send something in the mail. I'm gonna print off something like a baseball card looking thing. And it's going to... Congratulations. And with him being so young and new to the major leagues, he'll probably think that like this is a thing that is normal.
It's a real award.
It's something that comes with playing in Arlington, man.
Yeah, so if you were watching that game yesterday and getting mad at Edwin Diaz, it means you weren't watching the real pitching performance between pitchers who are actually good. Chris Sale and Shai Manaea went head-to-head, Red Sox A's. Red Sox the best team in baseball this year, and Manaea no-hit them, which... That was cool, and I've been afraid of Shai Manaea for many years, and I'm quite glad we'll not have to see him in this upcoming series, because, ooh boy, if Manaea's starting to feel himself, run.
He's looked good for extended periods, and for the sake of the A's, they have to be really excited about his progress, and they have a good offense, and Oakland, I think there was a couple of the people that are really dialed into baseball. I looked at the A's as a sneakily good team that could win 90 games or something and compete for a wild card, and so far they've been looking pretty good.
Hey, Matt Olson's good. Matt Chapman's good. Chris Davis is going to hit 7,000 home runs, probably at least 6,000 of them in our upcoming series. Oakland comes to town, 3-game set. Matt Moore against Trevor Cahill, Cole Hamels versus Andrew Triggs, and then probably Doug Fister coming back on Wednesday so that we can push Minor back and keep him on decent rest. Fister, if he makes that appearance on Wednesday, would go up against Kendall Graveman. So even if we sweep the series, we will still be a half game behind Oakland in the West. So for all of you out there who are scoreboard watching, oof. Still should be entertaining. Hopefully we can see some good swinging from Renato Nunez, mad at his old team. I don't know. That's all I'm here for. Renato Nunez hitting home runs. That's the 2018 Rangers. Whatever. Shut it down. Go home.
For you Rangers fans who are scoreboard watching, yeah, you should really rethink your strategy.
I keep refreshing the standings page, and it has us last. Where is the technical error here? There's a problem. I would like to speak to a manager, but not our manager, because Jeff Banister scares me. All right, so that about wraps us up for episode 8 of the Rangers Rundown. Hope you guys are enjoying the pod so far. We certainly are enjoying putting it together. You can keep up with us on Twitter, at Rangers Rundown. Individually, we are at Svelte Marvin, with all those V's that Hayden so desperately enjoys, at BUH Money, and at C. Michael Kinzer. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us at Rangers Rundown. If you want to shoot us a message, we can be reached by email at rangersrundown@gmail.com. So keep listening. Keep spreading the word. Keep hollering us about out there. And hopefully we'll have a few more Rangers wins to talk about in our next episode, hopefully coming to you on Friday morning. So that's it for me. Long silent pause.
just say like for all of us. Thanks for listening.
And for all of us here at Rangers Rundown, thank you so much for listening, and I hope Hayden edits all of this. Good night.
Good night, everybody.